If you've ever wanted an introduction to Social Security with just straight facts and no nonsense, stick around for this, the 25th episode of the Retirement Planning Education Podcast.
Welcome to the Retirement Planning Education Podcast, where you can learn all about IRAs and Roth IRAs, employer retirement plans, taxes, Social Security, Medicare, portfolio withdrawal strategies, annuities, estate planning, and much more. And now here's your host, Andy Panko.
All right. Welcome, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. We got a fun one today. I'll be talking about Social Security. Huge topic. I'm going to break it down and consider this the intro to Social Security. I'll give you some background, some facts and figures, the basics of the system. And in future episodes, I'll dig more into specifics that you're probably interested about, such as when should I take Social Security? That's probably the most common question I get about Social Security. And also explain some other things about survivor benefits, spousal benefits, benefits for children, and some other things to consider, as well as taxation. Maybe I might get into that. So I haven't quite specced out exactly how many episodes this will be. Today is definitely an intro. We'll see how the time's going. If it's much longer than a half hour after I'm running through this, I'll stop and cut the rest to another one. But future episodes, nonetheless, will be, just so you know, again, things like when should I take Social Security, or deeper dive into some of the things we'll talk about today. Today is really just an intro, fairly high level. Social Security has a sweet spot in my heart because it's really what brought me into doing retirement planning. For those of you who don't know, the almost 20 years prior to me starting my retirement planning business, I was in corporate and institutional investment banking. Still working around investments, worked in insurance a few years. So know the products, a lot of the strategies, investments, know those at a fairly deep, quite deep level, but didn't really know much about things like Social Security until it was 2016, I believe. My mom was transitioning into retirement, and her advisor at the time wasn't able to get her finite answer, definitive answer about a Social Security claiming strategy she was trying to do. And I didn't know much, but I sort of dug in, helped her research, and fell in love. And that's when the proverbial light went off over my head. It was like, yes, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Dug into Social Security code and rules, found the answer, and was just kind of taken back at how complicated the system was, and also enjoyed the process. It was like this big puzzle I was trying to solve. So that point is that my foray into Social Security has really redirected my professional life, and from that point forward, it was all laser focused on doing this. And it took me 3 years to plan out and eventually start my business and make sure I do it right, do it my way, offer the services I want to offer, charge how I want to charge, whatever. I'm getting off topic now. The main thing is, it was really Social Security that sparked my interest in making the career change to do this, and the rest is history, as they say. So I kind of have a sweet spot in my heart for Social Security. Know it well, fascinated by it, and it really is the backbone. It's the foundation of many people's retirement plans, so it's important to understand it and get your claiming decision right. So with that in mind, let's get into it, and I'll start with the overview. So first, what is Social Security? Some of this stuff's fairly high level, but stick with me. Well, it's a federal benefit program that pays a minimum level of lifetime income to eligible retirees and disabled persons. It also potentially pays benefits to retirees and disabled persons' spouses, widows or widowers, and children. And I'll explain what I mean by that as we go on. It is overseen by the Social Security Administration, which is part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. It is funded primarily by FICA taxes, F-I-C-A, which stand for Federal Insurance Contributions Act. And these are taxes withheld from employees' paychecks, or if you're self-employed, you have to pay these taxes yourself. Majority of people who work in the United States are covered by Social Security, meaning they have FICA taxes taken out of their wages or self-employment. Some exceptions are federal employees hired before 1984, were not required to pay into Social Security. They were given the chance to opt into it after that, but they didn't have to. About a quarter of state and municipal employees are not covered by Social Security. So often it'll be like teachers, for example. They'll have their own state pension system. They may not be covered by Social Security. They did not pay in during their lives, nor are they able to get money out in many cases from Social Security system. And also employees of certain religious organizations are not covered by the system. Few key historical events. In 1935, the Social Security Act was signed into law. Prior to that, there was no federal retiree sort of safety net based on history I've read. You know, before that time, when we were more of an agrarian society, well, whatever, you know, people lived and worked on farms. There's sort of multi-generations living in a house and everyone sort of cared for one another. You sort of worked until you physically couldn't. Then you'd stay in the home, and then the younger generations would tend to the farm and tend to the elders of the family. And then eventually the elders would pass and, you know, everybody moves on. And there's this sort of multiple generations of cycle of life inside one house. So you didn't really have to worry about, there were exceptions obviously, but as a whole, apparently, people didn't have to worry about who's going to pay for my retirement because your family was there. You all sort of lived together and took care of each other. But as we became industrialized, people moved to the cities and, you know, away from the farms. There did need to be start to be this sort of federal backstop, retirement backstop, to provide some basic level of income to folks. So that was 1935 when the act was signed into law. 1937 was when FICA taxes were first collected. So it was a two-year period where people did not pay in as they were kind of going live with the system. 1940, monthly benefits were first paid out of the system. It wasn't until 1975 that there were automatic cost of living adjustments, or COLA, C-O-L-A. Prior to that, there were sort of these one-off inflation adjustments that were made by the government as they kind of saw fit. 1975, there was these provisions built in that, no, there's going to be automatic cost of living adjustments if and when there's inflation, instead of having to do these one-off things. And then in 1983, benefits became federally taxable for some people, not everyone. But prior to 1983, Social Security benefits were completely excluded from federal taxation. 1983, they began to be taxable for some people. What else? Next, funding the system. So as I mentioned, the system is largely funded by FICA taxes, F-I-C-A. People who are covered, meaning they work for an employer that that pays into the system, covered employees pay 6.2% of their wages up to what's known as the annual contribution and benefit base. For 2022, for example, the contribution and benefit base is $147,000. So if you make anywhere from, $1 to $147,000, you're an employee of somewhere else, you will pay 6.2% of your wages up to $147,000. If you make more than $147,000, you do not pay any more additional Social Security tax beyond that $147,000 amount. So whether you make $147,001 or you make $10 million, you pay in the same amount because it's, again, 6.2% up to $147,000. As I mentioned, if you work for someone else, you only pay at 6.2%. The employer pays another 6.2% on your behalf, and that's also 6.2% up to the $147,000 contribution benefit base. If you're self-employed, guess what? You are both the employer and employee. As such, you pay both the 6.2% as employer plus 6.2% as employee, which means, do the math, drumroll please, you are paying a total of 12.4% of your net earnings up to the year's contribution and benefit base, which again for 2022 is $147,000. Now, for what it's worth, you do get a slight tax break when you are self-employed. The employer portion, I think you get a break on that, tax deduction for the amount of benefits you pay there. But whatever, it helps a little bit. It doesn't make a huge difference, but helps a little bit. So that's how the system's funded. Now, where does this money go? The FICA taxes are paid into two trust funds. We'll collectively call them one because functionally they kind of act like one. One is the Old Age and Survivors Insurance Fund, and the other is the Disability Insurance Fund. So the Old Age and Survivor Insurance is known as OASI. The Disability Insurance is known as DI. Fairly straightforward. The Old Age and Survivors is the trust, is a pot of money that pays benefits to retirees and their survivors if and when the retiree dies. The Disability Trust Fund is the one that pays benefits to disabled persons. Again, they're separate technically, but functionally, the Social Security kind of treats them as one rolled up pot. So point is that the FICA taxes get paid into these two trust funds, which are, again, functionally one. So that's the main source of income that comes in. There's also interest that's paid on the money sitting inside the trust fund. And then the federal income taxes paid on benefits also is paid into the trust fund. And then from that trust fund, the outflows of money are the benefit, by far the largest payment is the benefit expenses, those people getting retiree benefits or disability benefits. And to a much lesser extent, there's also some administrative expenses to run the system, and then some railroad retiree benefits that are paid. I'll save that till later. I have some facts and figures on those, time permitting. So how do you become eligible for benefits? Well, to be eligible for retirement benefits, you need to earn what's called 40 credits during your lifetime. How do you get a credit? A credit is equal to a certain amount of earnings for the year. In 2022, for example, one credit is equal to $1,510 of earnings, and these amounts go up each year. You can earn up to 4 credits per year. So if one credit is $1,510, 4 credits would be $6,040. So if you earn at least $6,040 in 1 year, in 2022 specifically, you get the full 4 credits for that year. So do the math. If you need 40 credits in total to be fully insured by the Social Security system, and you can only get 4 credits per year, that means it'll take you at a minimum, at the fastest, 10 years in total to earn your full credits. And as you can see, credits aren't a lot. If you make a few thousand bucks a year, basically you're getting your full 4 credits. Once you hit 40 credits, that's it. You're fully in the system. It doesn't matter if you earn 50, 60, 70 credits, you hit the 40 and you're done. You're in the system. There's also, in addition to paying benefits to retirees, there's also what's called auxiliary benefits, where there can be benefits paid to the spouse of the retiree, to the minor child of the retiree, to a disabled child of the retiree, or even dependent parents in some cases. And I should mention spouse also includes divorced spouses. So long as you are married at least or more than 10 years, it's possible that divorced spouses can also get benefits off an ex-spouse's Social Security record. The benefit amount you're able to get, this is pretty technical. Definitely check out a video I'll put a link to in the notes, is all keyed off something called your primary insurance amount, or PIA. Long story short, again, this is quite unwieldy, so check out the video. I have a fairly straightforward step through examples of how to do this. Your primary insurance amount is the sum of your 35 highest years of what's called indexed earnings. Index earnings simply means you take all the years of earnings prior to the year you turn 60 and adjust them for inflation from the year you earn them up to the year you turn 60. So as an example, if, 40, let's say you turn 60 this year, 40 years ago, you know, wages were a lot smaller. Let's say you only made 20 grand in total wages 40 years ago. And this year you made, let's say, I'm just making up a number, $60,000. Well, you can't compare on an apples-to-apples basis $20,000 earned 40 years ago and $60,000 earned now, because there's a lot of inflation since then. So the indexing process will basically adjust that $20,000 40 years ago to a present-day figure based on changes in the national average wage index over the last 40 years. So the point is, you go through all of your prior years of earnings, you know, prior to the year you turn 60, and index them or adjust them for inflation up to the year you turn 60. Those are your indexed earnings. Then you take the highest 35 of those years, average them out. You divide it by 420 to get to an average monthly amount, and 420 because 35 years times 12 months in a year, it means there's 420 months in 35 years. So when you you add up your 35 highest wages, divide by 420, that's now your averaged indexed monthly earnings. And then against that, you run that through this three-step formula, where a portion of that is 90% of that is counted in your total Social Security benefit. The next is only counted at 32%. The next is counted at 15%. Let me leave it there for now. The gist is, you take your highest 35 years, average it, 35 adjusted years, adjusted for inflation, average it. Then you run it through this formula with these two things called bend points, where up to a certain amount of the first bend point, you take 90%, the next amount is 32, the next is 15. Add all those up, and that's your primary insurance amount. Leave it there for now. Again, check out the video. It'll walk through it, make a lot more sense. But that's where your benefits, retirement benefits, are all keyed off of this concept of primary insurance amount, which is a key takeaway. Use your highest 35 years of inflation-adjusted earnings. Let's leave that there for now. There's something called the full retirement age, which has nothing to do with when you actually stop work. The term full retirement age is purely in the context of Social Security. Full retirement age, the significance is, if you start your benefit at your full retirement age, you will receive your primary insurance amount, which is an amount we just talked about. That's where all your benefits are keyed off of. The full retirement age is based on your year of birth. Most people listening to this probably born in 1960 or later. And the reason why I say 1960 or later is because if you were born 1960 or later, your full retirement age is 67. If you were born prior to 1954, or I'm sorry, 54 or earlier, your full retirement age is 66. And for every year in between 1954 and 1960, the full retirement age is increased by 2 months. So for example, if you were born in 1955, your full retirement age is 66 and 2 months. If you were born in 1956, it's 66 and 4 months, et cetera. Keep tacking on 2 months per year up until you get to 1960 or later, where again, full retirement age is 67. And I'll talk about this in future episodes when I get into maximizing your benefit and the right claiming strategy for you. All this stuff will matter because you can start your benefits as early as age 62, your retirement benefit. But if you do, the benefit amount you'll get will be reduced from what your primary insurance amount is. Because again, your primary insurance amount is assumes you start the benefit at your full retirement age. If you start it earlier, it will be reduced. How much is it reduced? I don't want to get too carried away here, but if you started at 62 and your full retirement age is 67, there will be a 30% reduction from your primary insurance amount. If you started at 63, there'll be a 25% reduction. If you started at 64, there's a 20% reduction. If you started at 65, there's a 13.33% reduction. And if you were to start at 1 year early at 66, there would be a 6.67% reduction from your primary insurance amount. It works the opposite way too. If you delay and start your benefit later than your full retirement age, your benefit will be higher than your primary insurance amount. Specifically, again, assuming your full retirement age is 67, if you start your benefit at 68, your actual benefit amount will be 8% higher than your primary insurance amount. If you start your benefit at 69, it'll be 16% higher. If you start at 70, it'll be 24% higher. Let's leave that there for now. Again, I'll dig into this more in more depth in future episodes. So just to put some numbers around this, 2022, so your primary insurance amount is calculated when the year you turn 62. Leave it there for now. Again, check out the video I did. It'll make more sense why. But the year you turn 62 is when your formal primary insurance amount is first calculated. For someone turning 62 in 2022, the maximum primary insurance amount they can have is $3,358 per month of Social Security benefit. Again, that's the primary insurance amount. So someone turning 62 this year, 2022, they have the maximum amount of earnings for at least 35 years, because again, your primary insurance amount is based on your 35 highest years of earnings. So if they hit the maximum earnings every year, and the reason why I say maximum is recall that you only pay taxes, Social Security taxes, on earnings up to each year's respective contribution and benefit base. So this year, like I said, that benefit base is $147,000. Well, that's indexed for inflation. You know, that's gone up a bit every year. So decades ago, it wasn't that much. Decades ago, it was, $80,000. So the point is, if you earned at least the contribution and benefit base for 35 years, you will have the maximum Social Security benefit you can possibly get. So again, someone turning 62 in 2022, which means their full retirement age is 67, the maximum possible primary insurance amount you can have is $3,358 a month. Again, that means if you were to start your benefit at age 67, that's what you'd get. Now, there's more to it than that because there will be inflation between now and then. So practically speaking, if you do wait till 67, it'll be something higher than that. But where we stand today, assuming no inflation going forward, $3,358 a month is what you get if you start at 67. And for what it's worth, if you were to start ASAP, you start as early as 62, that payment will be reduced by 30%, such that you'll actually get $2,351 a month if you start your benefit now, this year, 2022, if you're age 62. Some other fun facts about 2022 benefit amounts. The current average benefit paid to retirees is $1,066 a month, much less than the $3,358 I just referenced. Well, that's for a few reasons. One is that $3,358 was assuming you hit the maximum 35 years of earnings. So you were a high earner your whole career. It also assumes you actually start your benefit at your full retirement age. In reality, most people start before full retirement age. That's not saying that's good or bad. You'll find out in future episodes, what's a better decision for you or the best decision for you. But the more people than not start prior to full retirement age, so therefore benefits are less. So again, current average benefit paid is $1,666 per month. That's as of April 2022, monthly release that Social Security puts out. There are 47.7 million retired workers receiving benefits under the Social Security system. The current average benefit paid to a spouse of a retired worker is $837 a month currently. Again, recall their spousal benefits that spouses can get off of their you know, working spouses or retired spouses' Social Security record. And there's also survivor benefits. Again, I'll dig into these more in a future episode, but the current average monthly survivor benefit paid to the spouse of a deceased retiree under Social Security is $1,560 a month. So, spoiler alert, for married couples, Social Security claiming decision, it really needs to be made in the context of the married unit, not just one of you, because long story short, when the higher earning spouse dies, his or her benefit lives on for the surviving spouse. So if you're married, the claiming decision around when to start Social Security is likely going to be different than if you were single, because you have this spousal survivor benefit thing to have to take into consideration. But we'll save that for a future episode. How to estimate your benefit? Well, you can, if you haven't already, go to www.ssa.gov/myaccount. You can set up an account. On there, once you do, you can see your benefit estimates from, you know, 62 all the way up to age 70. You can also see the possible survivor benefits that are eligible to be paid to your spouse or children if you have any, if you were to die prematurely. And even if you are relatively young and not near claiming Social Security age, it's still a great practice to sign up for an account as soon as possible for a few reasons. One is it shows your earnings history. So you can see if there's any missing years. For example, it's possible maybe your employer forgot to report your earnings to Social Security. That's not cool, because then you'll get a bit of a lowball benefit when time comes to file, because there's going to be some 0 years of earnings reported in your history. And when Social Security goes off the 35 highest earnings, you don't want it to be including erroneously including a year of zero earnings. Another good reason is for ID protection. By you creating your account now, you are preventing a would-be fraudster from beating you to it and file or creating an account as you maliciously some point down the road. So there is pretty robust security on it. You do it'll access your credit report. It doesn't hurt your credit, but it'll pull some information from your credit report to prove it's actually you. There'll be some ID verification questions and things like that. So it is a fairly secure system from what I see, but I'm not an IT expert, so take that for what it's worth. Taxability of benefits. Definitely check out a video I did on this. This is a fairly hairy calculation, but in a nutshell, at the federal level, up to 85% of your Social Security benefits may be included in your taxable income. Look at it another way, at least 15% of your Social Security benefits will not be federally taxable under current legislation. This is subject to change. If I had to guess, if I was a betting man, I'd say 100% of Social Security will be taxable at some point, but that's just me. That's just wild speculation. Educated guess, let's call it. But as it stands now, no more than 85% of your Social Security benefits may be taxable. There's a hairy formula behind that to calculate the actual percentage. But again, check out my YouTube video. It'll do it much better justice than me trying to verbally explain it. At the state level, the majority of states don't tax Social Security at all. There are, I think, 38 that don't, give or take one. I could be wrong. And therefore, only 12, give or take one, that potentially do tax Social Security. So all things considered, Social Security is a fairly tax-favored source of income to get. You know, at the state level, likely not taxable. At the federal level, at most, only 85% of your benefits will be considered taxable. Some other miscellaneous information. Here's some sort of random program statistics I think are interesting. As of 2020, so every year there's a board of trustees that oversees the Social Security program. Every year, some point in the summer, they put out a trustees report that summarizes the previous year's sort of facts and figures and health of the system. So as of the 2021 trustees report, that was the 2022 should be coming out soon, hasn't yet, next few months it will. But as of the 2021 report, which summarized 2020 information, there were 65 million people in total receiving benefits under the Social Security system. That's 49 million retired people and their dependents, 10 million disabled workers and their dependents, and then 6 million survivors of deceased workers. As far as paying in, there were 175 million workers paying into the system by way of those FICA taxes, FICA taxes. And there was $1.118 trillion of total income paid into the Social Security system and $1.107 trillion of total expenses. Just to get a little more detail. So for 2020, again, these are the figures I'm looking at. There were $11 billion more that came into the system than went out. So where does that money go? All that excess income sits in those trust funds. Like I said, the money sits there in those trust funds and that it's invested and it earns interest. As of the end of 2020, there were $2.9 trillion of excess funds, if you will, in the Social Security system. Again, the system took in more than it paid out for the year, so the excess stays in the trust fund. Now, what happens if the system pays out more than it takes in? Well, then it taps into the trust fund to make whole and pay those expenses, you know, to the extent that the incoming income doesn't cover it. Just to put some numbers to it, as I mentioned before, total income for 2020 was $1.118 trillion of income. The vast, vast majority of that was FICA taxes. Again, workers and self-employed people having to pay that 6.2 or 12.4% of wages. So it was $1.001 trillion of FICA taxes were paid into the system. $76.1 billion of interest was earned on the, you know, nearly $3 trillion of money sitting in the trust fund. And then the income taxes paid on Social Security benefits were $40.7 billion. So it's important to know that Social Security, it's a ring-fenced system. Do not pay attention to anyone who says the government raided it. That's just categorically false. Under no circumstances is that true. Now, my guess is the basis for rabble-rousers making those juicy comments is that, yes, all of the $2.9 trillion in the trust fund is borrowed by the federal government. It is, in effect, invested in U.S. Treasury securities, you know, IOUs, if you will. So all of the money, by law, all the money in the trust fund is borrowed by the government, and the government does use that for general government expenditures. But the government has thus far never failed to pay back the money on time and with interest. Like I said, interest is paid on that. 2020 alone, there was $76.1 billion of interest paid into the Social Security system because the trust fund was invested. So I would argue that the fact that the trust fund is borrowed by the government and interest is paid on it is a good thing because it's that much more money paid into the system. Like I said, the system is ring-fenced. You know, the income it gets in stays within the system, and the expenses it pays out are only those associated with the system. So it isn't this maliciously used slush fund for those dirty politicians to take and spend at their whim. It's just simply false. That's not the case. So anyway, $1.118 trillion taken in for 2020, and total expenses in 2020 were $1.107 trillion. Vast majority was benefits paid, you know, those paid to retirees, disabled people, survivors. $1.096 trillion were paid to, you know, paid in benefits. $6.3 billion were paid in administrative expenses. So, you know, offices and overhead of running the system and employees. And then other, you know, another, I think it was $5 billion. That's largely certain retiree benefits. You know, railroad employee benefits. They have their own sort of system, loosely similar to Social Security, but technically different. Some of their benefits are wrapped up into the Social Security system. That was $5 billion paid in 2020. So all in, the system took in $11 billion more last year than it paid out. That extra $11 billion stayed in the trust fund. All right, Social Security's future. You've probably read the headlines. You know, it doesn't sound good. So at the end of 2020, like I said, the trust funds had $2.9 trillion of excess money in them. But, starting, I believe, last year, the system started taking in less than it was paying out. So just like I said, in 2020, it took in more than it paid out, and it did for years prior. 2021, I believe, was the year where that flipped. All of a sudden, now the system started paying out more than it was taking in. And like I said, when that happens, it has to fund the deficit from tapping into the trust fund. So based on the projections in the last Social Security trustees report, it was anticipated that at that rate that income and expenses were trending, the trust fund will deplete in 2034. If and when that happens, as of now, and a lot can change for better or worse, it's projected that worst case, all benefits would need to be reduced by 26% in order to keep the system whole. In other words, the income coming in would only cover, you know, 74% of the expenses going out. So therefore, if there's no trust fund to fund the difference, they can only pay out what they're getting in, which means all benefits would have to be reduced by 26%. Or in other words, people would only start getting 74% of their benefits. Now, save this for a separate episode, but things will change. The system will get bolstered to some extent. It takes a lot of political will to change the system, to increase the system, because it's all going to come down to people have to pay more in or get less out, or some combination of the two, which neither of which are palatable politically. So my guess is there'll be changes at the 11th hour to help shore up the system. And for what it's worth, in my opinion, I can't picture a world where people who are already getting Social Security or close to it run a risk of having their benefits reduced. That's political suicide. You know, retirees are, I believe, the largest voting bloc. So I don't see it happening. My opinion is people younger, like me, I'm in my 40s, me and folks younger than me will have our benefits reduced and we'll have to pay more into the system. That's my guess. I wouldn't be surprised if those getting benefits have to pay more tax on it, like I said. Currently, only 85% at most of benefits are taxable. I would not be surprised if that goes to 100, but I can't see benefits, you know, gross amount of benefits getting reduced for people who are on or near Social Security. But that's just my guess. We'll see what the revised figures and depletion date is for the trust fund when this year's trustee report comes out. Again, should be the next few months. And I'll do an episode on that when the time comes. But so that's the trust fund. That's the future. Some quick fun facts and we'll wrap up here. You know how Social Security numbers are 9 digits, you know, 3 and then 2 and then 4 more digits. Well, yes, the first Social Security number was 001-01-0001. Kind of cool, huh? I wonder who that was. The numbers used to be issued geographically. So depending what area of the country you're in, like the first three numbers, for example, would denote your area of the country. So the East Coast had the lower first three numbers. The West Coast had the higher first three numbers. Since 2011, though, numbers have been randomly assigned. So anyone born 2011 or later, you can't make heads or tails out of seeing their Social Security number. You know, you can't tell where they're from, I should say. And that was simply done to help strengthen, you know, ID theft or minimize ID theft. Because if you know just from looking at someone's Social Security number where they were born, you know, that's already probably too much information for someone to be able to figure out. So numbers are randomly assigned starting in 2011. Remember I said at the beginning of this episode, in 1940, that's when monthly benefits were first paid. But lump sums were paid from 1937 to 1940 as the system was ramping up. The first recipient to get a lump sum out of the system got paid 5 cents. He only paid in 5 cents, and he received a total of 17 cents of lump sum. Awesome, right? He tripled his money. Terrible comment. Do not view Social Security as an investment account. It's not earmarked for you. You don't have your own personal account. You do have an internal record keeping of how much money you're supposed to be entitled to. But this is ultimately one big social welfare system. And I don't mean that in a bad way to call it a welfare system, but it's not an individual account. You pay in for the sake of the nation's retirees. It's loosely similar to like property taxes, where the majority of your property tax goes to pay for local schools. Doesn't matter how much usage you do or don't get out of local schools, you still pay in the same amount of school tax just the same. Social Security is kind of the same way. Some people get a lot more out than they pay in. Some get a lot less out. Some get nothing out than, you know, compared to, and they paid in for years. So don't view it as like an earmarked account in that sense. Maybe it's fair, maybe it's not. You know, like I said, some people get a lot more out, some get a lot, none out, and everything in between. So anyway, so first recipient of a lump sum only paid in 5 cents, got out 17. And then final fun fact, first monthly check was paid on January 13th, 1940. That first check was for $22.54. The recipient who received that check only paid in a total of $24.75 into the system during her life. She ultimately lived to age 100 and received total payments from Social Security equal to $22,888.92. Again, she paid in $24.75. She got out nearly $23,000 over her lifetime. So as you can tell, the system is not 100% fair, far from it, but it is what it is. With that, just it's important to understand it, make the most of it, realize what it is, what it isn't, and do the best you can to get as much as you can out of it as possible, because again, Social Security is often the backbone, the foundation of many people's retirement plans. So that's it for now. I'll leave this one here. Hopefully you found this somewhat informative and slightly entertaining with these fun facts. I'll be sure to do additional episodes to dig more into some specifics. I'm sure you have a lot more questions about this, but we'll save that for another day. As always, if you like this, please definitely give it a nice 5-star review and thumbs up, a like, whatever it is, depending what podcast platform you're listening to it on. And if you like the content discussed, not just in this episode, but in other podcast episodes of mine, you'll definitely like my other content sources. The Facebook group is called Taxes and Retirement. YouTube channel is Retirement Planning Demystified. And my monthly newsletter is Retirement Planning Insights. You can find links to all three in the show notes. That's it. As always, thank you for listening. I'll see you next time.
The information discussed in this podcast is only general explanations and education. It is not specific tax, legal, or investment advice. Before considering acting on anything you heard here, first consult with your tax, legal, or investment advisor. Thank you.